Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hello, and welcome to Double Take, a brand new podcast from The Independent. I'm your host, Kirsty Major. Each week, we'll bring in one of our columnists to the studio to read one of their most popular comment pieces. Then we'll catch up with them to ask what happened after we clicked publish. Do they still hold the same views now, or did your response make them think again? Today, we're joined by Political Commentator of the Year and satirist Matthew Norman. Last week, he explained why the Russia affair is the beginning of the end for Trump in his piece, Republican Worms Will Turn As Soon As Trump's Ratings Dive. Let's hear him again.
When historians settle down to analyse Donald Trump's presidency, will they fix on 10th to 11th of May as the beginning of the end? Reflecting on this brief yet frantic passage of time, it's hard to compute that even the grand master of self-inflicted disaster can press so much idiocy, lunacy and mayhem into barely 24 hours. It isn't exactly that you couldn't make it up. Whatever Richard Littlejohn's thinking, you obviously could. If Trump's political career teaches nothing else, it's that you can make anything up. But why would you bother making this up, when every studio executive would bin the proposal halfway through page one for being too crude and silly for the broadest satirical comedy? A brief recap might be handy for those like me left breathless and bamboozled by the pace of events. When on the 10th of May Trump sacked FBI Director James Comey, the White House line was that this had nothing to do with his investigations into any Russian links. It was solely because veteran Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, eyeing up his retirement clock after a fortnight in the job, demanded Comey's refusal because he hadn't nailed Hillary Clinton for being careless with classified material. The following day, Trump torpedoed that hastily invented nonsense by admitting it was solely his decision, helpfully mentioning his vexation with this Russia thing in the same sentence. Also on 11th of May, sensitive as always to the optics, he hosted Russia's foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, and Ambassador Sergei Kislyak, the guy several Trump world stalwarts met secretly before the inauguration, in the Oval Office. With the American press excluded from the powwow, the only media outlet given access was TASS, the Putin House Journal, which moonlights as Moscow's leading news agency. Until today, the episode's gold medal for surreal derangement belonged to Sean Spicer, Trump's adorably hapless press secretary, who briefed about Comey's firing while apparently hiding in the bushes. I say apparently because he disputed this, forcing the Washington Post to correct its story. Far from being in the bushes, it amended, Spicy had been among the bushes. Whether Trump was already in or among deep trouble on the Russia front, his situation dramatically worsened today. Unabashed by its prepositional debacle of last week, the Washington Post revealed that on the 11th of May, Trump treated the Russians, representatives of a hostile foreign power, to information about the alleged ISIS plot to detonate laptop bombs on aircraft, so highly classified that the United States hadn't shared it with its closest allies. Inevitably, Trump officials in attendance have issued the sort of non-denial denials that will satisfy such propaganda machines as Breitbart, but no one else. The claim that Trump prefaced his disclosure, probably treasonous from anyone but the commander-in-chief, with a babyish boast, is all too credible. I get great intel, he reportedly told the Russians. I have people brief me on great intel every day. Do you reckon Lavrov and Kislyak would have been sceptical about that claim, which is about half as startling as I have a great plane, Air Force One, just the most tremendous 747? Yet seemingly fearful that the Russians wouldn't believe that the United States president is privy to intelligence reports, Trump offered a juicy tidbit to slay their doubts. There are two viable explanations for this sequence of events. One is that Trump, mightily worried about the Russia thing, was laying the ground for the Jimmy Savile defense. Savile hid himself, or among plain sight, partly by lasciviously squeezing pubescence on top of the pops. If I really like young girls, the messaging went, would I be so stupid and reckless as to cuddle them on TV? Perhaps Trump thought that if he concertinaed the Comey sacking and the Russian meeting into a few hours, the blatancy would allow him to run that defence later. The other rationale is that he is stupid and more reckless than previously feared. I think we can guess which is the odds-on chance. But either way, his lucky streak is running out, to judge by the infuriation of senior Republicans. The White House has got to do something soon to bring itself under control and in order, says Bob Corker, chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. It's got to happen. Yeah, good luck with that one, Bob. Political history may never have known a more nauseating bunch of invertebrates than today's Republicans. You can look to Caligula's Senate and similarly spineless apparatus in countless tyrannies since, but they had the excuse of wanting to avoid having themselves and their families set alight, disemboweled, or shot. However impressive this homage to Caligula, and making Betsy DeVos Education Secretary was a match at the very least for making a horse consul, Trump cannot execute Republican senators and representatives. These wretches have only their incomes and status to protect. Since they've proved that they will do anything in that cause, it's a gimme they will abandon Trump the moment they see him as a mortal danger to their re-election. The Republican resistance has been a trickle until now, but Corker's blunt outrage suggests it may be about to snowball. If and when Trump's approval ratings dive into the mid-30s to threaten their chances in the midterms of November 2018, these worms will turn. Suddenly, publicly, they will notice that the only garment standing between their emperor and total nakedness is a gold-brocaded straitjacket.
That was Matthew Norman reading his column, Republican Worms Will Turn As Soon As Trump's Ratings Dive Over the Russia Affair. There'll be a link to the original piece on the site in the show notes.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Up next, we'll be talking to him about why he's living for the Trump drama and why the end of Trump may also be the end of the American media. Thank you for coming in to read the piece, Matthew.
My pleasure, Kirsty. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. So you wrote the piece on Tuesday.
And inevitably, given who we're writing about and talking about, huge amounts developed since. And what I was saying at the end was that I thought the Republicans were about to turn. Is happening quicker than anyone could have expected because of the subsequent and even more sensational disclosure in the New York Times this time about alleging that Trump tapped up James Comey and kind of said, look, he's a great guy, Mike Flynn, can you lay off him? It doesn't sound like it. If it is a joke, it's not winning any awards at the Edinburgh Fringe this year, is it?
And it's not only that, is it? There's also the appointment of a
I mentioned in the piece Rod Rosenstein, and how he pronounces it, who is the deputy attorney general and who is handling this because the actual attorney general, Jeff Sessions, the allegedly wildly racist guy from Alabama, who's like a sort of parody of some 1950s Jim Crow horror, he has had to recuse himself from the whole area because he has connections with the Russians. It's like one of those Russian dolls. Every time you open up someone, there's a little person inside with the same. Anyway, so this guy Rosenstein, who was lashed, widely lashed, for apparently doing Trump's bidding by... when they were pretending that this was the reason that Trump sacked Comey, because this guy Rosenstein, after 2 weeks in the job, had written a letter calling for him. Obviously, he was bullied into it. We can assume that. And equally, obviously, it appears he has responded, trying to regain his integrity, by appointing the special prosecutor, Robert Mueller, also a former director of the FBI with a very, very strong reputation for being a straight and proper person. Who we may imagine is going to pick this thing to bits. where it leads, we don't know. I mean, I've been thinking the last couple of days, it's all very well. I mean, we're all terrified of Trump. We all think he's mad and stupid and ignorant and all these things. But for people in the media, it would be a catastrophe if he went quickly. I mean, it would be, you know, people like me, what do you write about? You know, he's given us so many great moments. And for businesses, business models, I mean, you know, maybe not as much here, but certainly in the States. I mean, the revival of the big newspapers and CNN, other news resources, has been entirely because of Donald Trump. And you know, I think generally after American presidential election, the viewing figures to these networks collapse. This time they've gone soaring. So you know, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, as an old cynic and been in this business for a long time. If it gets more urgent and if Trump seems more vulnerable, if some news organizations looking to their balance sheets start to lay off, because if they bring him down, you know, they'll live in history in glory, you know, it might save the planet for all we know, but they will do themselves enormous financial damage because, you know, they need this and they need it for 8 years and not just another, you know, almost four.
It reminds me of something that we spoke about when Brexit happened, and I remember calling you on the phone. I think maybe it was just before Brexit happened, and you were saying, "Oh God, obviously as a citizen, this is going to be awful for the country." But you know, as a journalist, I'm just thinking, "Go on, like let the animals out of the zoo."
Well,
like,
I know. What can happen? See, I know there's a little bit of anarchist in mischievous imp in lots of us. The thing that might save America and the world is, I suppose, part of the Constitution, the First Amendment, the guarantee of freedom of speech. But specifically what's saving it is the press and the leakers within the White House, the people in the press who are publicizing those leaks, because nothing else has the power to shift him. The only thing that has the power to constrain him is public opinion.
You could also argue that the press made him in the same way that it made someone like Farage, because you know, you give people like that so much airtime because they are pure entertainment.
Well, they are, and you know, it's not just as a journalist, you know, but as a person, and I know it sounds flippant, and it is. I'm a flippant person, but that feeling the day after Wimbledon, or the day after the World Cup, or even the day after the World Snooker in Sheffield, and you wake up and think, what the hell am I going to do? You feel that void inside you. If Trump went every day, we'd be, because when I wake up at 5:30, 6:00, whenever it is, without even thinking, it's like a reflex. I reach for the laptop and I go to the American websites to see what the man's done in the night, if anything. But first of all, you're absolutely right. Of course, he's a creation of the media. You know, a really great, brave media would have crushed this guy. You know, but the American media, some newspapers as well as particularly the networks, have this pompous, silly idea about equivocation, about balance. So if somebody says that the Earth is flat and somebody says the Earth is round, they have to kind of say the Earth is flat as another opinion. You know. Which it is, but then, you know, there are lots of other opinions, and they're also demented. So I think you're absolutely right about that. I think, and the media will miss him, and we will all miss him. Anyone who has got, I think it is literally an addiction. I mean, there are, when you read stuff like this, the brain produces psychochemicals, you know, dopamine, adrenaline, and it's like getting addicted to gambling. You need that fix, you know? And there's no one of our sort of generations who when you go to the computer and you start going to websites, there's a bit of you that's kind of craving something awful just for the adrenaline rush. But when he goes, it is going to leave a lot of people going cold turkey.
That's interesting when you think about his opinion ratings, though. So, yeah. You know, like you said in your piece, like the Republicans are going to have to turn on him. Or like his ratings would have to dive, for Republicans to start to turn.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just remember when the infamous, you know, vagina grabbing tape came out, and everyone was like, "This is the end of Trump. Well, I can't believe he said this as a candidate." But it was so entertaining that it got so much coverage, and people just thought he was a bit maverick. And I wonder, just a little bit maverick.
Yes.
I wonder if in any way this is comparable. Will the American public just think, oh, he's just not a president. This is the elite trying to bring him down.
The thing is about what you so elegantly and euphemistically call the vagina grabbing. Nice to keep it medical. The thing about that was he isn't Teflon, and he wasn't Teflon, and that damaged him a lot. It cost him 3 or 4 or 5 points rating in the polls, you know. So it did damage him, and if anyone had found that, apparently, you know, this tape allegedly of cuts of The Apprentice using the M word, that would have finished him, or you know, it would have been worth another 8 points. So he's not completely impervious to the same rules as everyone else, but what he does have is something, a kind of instinctive genius for brazening things out. I mean, it's not an intellectual process, that's just what he is. He's a force of nature.
Just going back to something you said earlier about Trump's style, sort of, you know, the shout of explosive, entertain him. I was just thinking, maybe while that got him into power and that's been keeping the media interest, you know, in him, does that sort of style start to work against you when you're going through a legal process? Because those explosions aren't very measured, and anything you say now can probably be, or anything you tweet will be held against you.
Well,
you know,
exactly.
So how things are unfurling will be...
Like, it's already happened. I mean, one of the primary reasons why the Muslim ban, as Sean Spicer kept telling us it wasn't, was overturned by various federal judges, is that he talked about a Muslim ban. He tweeted about it. He said, you know, he consulted, I think it was Rudy Giuliani, about how to present it in a legal way. I mean, you know, you're giving your defense up before the case, you know. So, yes, of course. Now, if he starts tweeting about this investigation while it's taking place, it won't deepen the eventual hole, but it'll dig it much more quickly. So it does seem that he is incapable, and those around him are incapable of shackling him. You know, they try to confiscate his phone, but they can't do that. So, I mean, he's already said it's the biggest witch hunt, I think, in history, hasn't he, today? There's a recent tweet. You've got to keep up.
I need a Donald Trump alert on my phone. That's what
you
I don't
do,
have.
Or some kind of electric shock whenever he says something crazy. Oh, what is it now? So we may assume, I think, fairly safely that he will continue to give us his own running commentary as this process goes on.
I have a hunch that maybe it's also already happened, and he's already given something away, which is obviously there was the letter which gave the official reason for Comey sacking.
The one from Rosenstein.
Yes. And then he gave an interview.
Exactly, as I said in the piece I read out for you. I mean, again, you know, everything what you read on the American online sites, it's complete chaos there. I mean, we saw Sean Spicer in the bushes. That's what it's like.
Which might be my favourite political moment of this year, and there's been quite a few.
It's the best,
but
isn't it?
It was the editor's... The editors note that they made the post, not the correction, which was among but not in.
He wasn't in the bushes. He was among. And there are pictures of him among the bushes. So, and you think, Sean Spicer, I mean, you know, you have to feel a bit sorry for him because, I mean, I know he's horrible, but what a job that is. So, you know, you've no idea. And suddenly someone, you can imagine it there. He's in his office trying to firefight on 8 fronts and someone runs in and says, Spicy, we've got a situation in the Oval Office. And, oh, what's he done now? God. And then he's got like 5-10 minutes, maybe half an hour to create some ridiculous, transparent excuse for what Trump's just done. In this case, they had to get this guy Rosenstein to write the letter. And then they say, well, it wasn't the president. The president was only following the advice of the most senior law official overseeing this process. And everyone says, bollocks to that, what a lot of nonsense, but there is some plausible deniability. And the next day, the mad bull goes on television with this guy Lester Holt, I think CBS, and says, no, nothing to do with Rosenstein, I was going to fire him anyway. So how do you're the press secretary, what the hell are you supposed to do, really? But why is the guy still there? I don't know why the guy's still there.
There's talk about him maybe no longer having his job.
I mean, it's an impossible job. Why would he want the job?
Why would he want it?
You know, I suppose you get lots of adrenaline. I suppose you're going to get a tremendous, you know, advance from some publisher for your... Even if he went now, after whatever it is, 17, 18 weeks, he'd have a fantastic book to write. Anyway, so I think my absolutely favourite moment, maybe of the last 5 years, is the vignette of Sean Spicer in the bushes, or among the bushes.
Among the bushes.
Briefing this pack that are like, they do look like ravening wolves of White House correspondents about this. And You know, I mean, he has to say something. He has to say what Trump wants him to say. So, I mean, you know, I know it's the Nuremberg defense, only obeying orders, but you can't envy the guy that job, can you?
Not at all.
No.
And that brings me on to my final question,
yeah,
which you just touched on, you know, on comedy and satire.
Yeah.
And it almost feels like it's, even though someone like Melissa
McCarthy
yeah, on SNL, I mean, she's
brilliant.
She's brilliant.
Absolutely.
Oh, brilliant. She's so good. But it's actually been really hard to satirise Trump. I mean, you do it fantastically, but he's almost beyond the pale.
You can't satirise him. I don't think anyone, and you don't need to. You can't satire auto-satire. Obviously, it's axiomatic impossibility. Not to say that, I mean, look at those late night hosts, you know, Stephen Colbert and Seth Meyers and Jimmy Kimmel. I mean, it's just heaven. I mean, it's almost too easy, isn't it, you think? You know, I wonder if they sometimes think, well, you know, we spent years schlapping around the stand-up clubs and in the writer's room and everything, and we're trained for more than this. Because basically all you have to do with Trump is read it out, what he said or tweeted, and then make a few snarky comments. But it's not a challenge for anyone who tries to make a living out of being funny, because it is just hilarious. And it's hilarious with the added savour that it could be Armageddon. And so, you know, the world could literally laugh itself to death. Although, you know, this week that prospect has receded, you know, with the likelihood, the growing likelihood that the 45th president won't necessarily see out his term.
Well, when this gets released next week, maybe we'll see what's happening. Well, but by then,
if this was released in 6 hours, it'd be out of date. Next week, it'll be like Thucydides, ancient history, and there'll be a whole new bucket load of madness to talk about.
Well, thank you for coming on. It's been really nice having you.
Really enjoyed it. Thanks, Betsy.
That's all for this week. Please rate, review and subscribe on iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts. It makes a big difference to new shows like ours if you do rate and review, so it'd be really appreciated. A big thanks to Helen Hoddenott for producing the show, Hannah Fenn as the editor of Independent Voices. I'm Kirsty Major. See you next week.